cube.
26 rooms high. 26 rooms across.
17,576 rooms.
Does anybody remember how they got here?
Why would they throw innocent people in here? Are we being punished?
There's a way in here, so there's gotta be a way out.
Do you think they'd go to all the trouble to build this thing if we could just walk out?
Take a good long look around. But I got a feeling it's looking at us.
We have about 3 days without food and water before we're too weak to move.
I just want to wake up.
I looked in the room down there and something almost cut my head off.
Motion detectors integrated into the walls.
Our guest today on Moving Radio is Vincenzo Natali. You know, you may know his work from series like Westworld or Hannibal, or maybe a film like Splice. But the two big films that we're going to be talking about is what's going to be featured at the Calgary Underground Film Festival. It's Cube and Nothing. And Vincenzo is going to be there as part of the Calgary Underground Film Festival when Cube screens on Saturday, April 20th at 4:45, as well as Nothing on Sunday, April 22nd. He's going to be there for both films, as well as two people who are involved with the film, Andrew Miller, as well as David Hewlett. Vincenzo, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks. This is great.
Oh, trust me, we are way more hyped about having you than you are about talking to me.
Not at all.
Yeah. Oh,
no,
yeah.
No. These are my babies. They don't get, you know, it's like having kids, right? It really is. Any attention that's given to them means so much to me.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
Well, and I think that's the cool thing about what Cuff is doing, where this isn't just simply about a retro screening. Having you there and doing two pieces of work for you that are about, you know, 20 plus years old is pretty incredible to be able to have that kind of focus on a weekend like that. Well, you know, let's go back and talk about the first one of those two projects that came out was Cube in 1997. And that one's going to be screening on Saturday, April 20th at 4:45. Let's kind of go back and look at that, because I'm sure you've done it several times, because that was probably the film that kind of put you over the top in so many different ways. When you reflect on 20 plus years ago and the making of Cube, which was quite an intense process in itself, not just on set, but that post-production as well, what do you think are the main things that you, when you look back on, that you take away from that experience that Cube was for you?
Well, the number one thing I think about is how damn lucky I was. Film is a very cruel, difficult medium to work in. And I was able to make the movie that I was passionate to make as my first film with people that I grew up with making films, like David and Andrew, with pretty much total creative freedom. It was like such a good experience that it actually made it hard for me to get my second film going, because I couldn't go backwards. Like, I couldn't compromise, given the first one was, you know, a strange movie that, particularly at the time, was outside of the box, if you will, pardon the horrible pun. I was incredibly fortunate to make that. It actually made it challenging for me to get a second film made in the same way, particularly once I was in sort of a more quote unquote legitimate space, like, you know, making films outside of the Canadian Film Center, which is where Cube had been made, which is a kind of film school, advanced film school. So I felt lucky. That was the first thing. And then the second thing I would say for anyone who's foolish enough to try to do this kind of thing, one of the big lessons I took out of it was you never know what you have. When I was making Cube, everything went wrong. So for all of the good stuff about it, there's a lot of things that didn't go right. And partly because I had this very pristine, perfect image in my head of what the movie should be, when on a daily basis, nothing worked and things were falling apart and it looked like we'd never finish the movie, it felt that much worse. So it was really, really tough. And I couldn't eat. I looked skeletal at the end of it. And even as I was cutting it, I just felt so disappointed in the movie. But I actually, eventually, when the film came out, you know, it started to get this great response. And it sort of, people seemed to like it more than I did. And then here we are, I don't know how many years later, 27 years later, something like that, and people are still talking about it. So the lesson that I take from that I would like to impart to other filmmakers who are putting their toes in the water is you just never know what you have. And sometimes the worst things have to happen before the best possible outcome results from it. And sometimes it can be hard to keep that kind of faith and optimism in what you're doing, but you just have to look at it a little bit like you're piloting an airplane and you're looking at your instruments, not looking out the window. That's not going to help you. You have to kind of develop this ability to see beyond what you're experiencing in the moment. And then if you can get past that, you might be surprised. Things might turn out better than you expected.
You talk about the process of going through that and how difficult was it on you. Do you feel like that was something that it was almost like a necessary evil that you had to like go right up against the wall and make as intense a process as you possibly could? Because there was so much at stake probably personally for you in that first film. Or do you kind of feel like if you could go back in time, you'd be like, young Vincenzo, just relax, take it easy. You've got this. Like, or do you feel like you're like, I hated what it did to me, but I kind of almost had to be in that space.
I don't think, no, I think I would never go back and shoot a film in a cube. Let me put it that way. I don't recommend it. It's actually surprisingly difficult. I think if I went back in time and talked to my younger, supposedly dumber self, I probably could give some advice, but I don't think I could have helped me with the experience. I think it was just going to be that way. The first one usually is a trial by fire. And it's partly because when you're making your first film, yes, you've invested a lot. In fact, you probably invested a good part of your life into making this thing happen because it's so hard to get these damn things made. So I don't think there's any getting around that really. And as you were saying, I actually think it kind of contributed to the movie. You know, it was a movie made with rubber bands and paper clips. And even now I like cringe when I see certain things, but there is somewhere in it, in its DNA, like this kind of emotional intensity that was on the set while we were making the film. And it wasn't just me, it was the actors, it was everybody. It was a very intense experience that translated into the movie and I think makes it a better movie. You know, one of the reasons why I would never consider remaking a film like that, you know, and it comes up like occasionally. I'm like, I don't, on top of never wanting to go back into a cube, I don't think even if I could do a slicker version of it, like I think I could do a quote unquote better version, but I don't think that the spirit of it would ever be the same because of exactly what you're talking about.
We're speaking today on Moving Radio with Vincenzo Natali. We are speaking specifically not about a new project, but actually a couple of his earlier films that are going to be featured as part of the Calgary Underground Film Festival. You'll be able to see him at the screenings, both screenings of Cube on Saturday, April 20th at 4:45 p.m., as well as Nothing on Sunday, April 22nd at 1 p.m. for Q&A after both screenings. So it should be an incredible experience. I highly suggest you not just go to the whole festival, of course, but specifically go to these two screenings because it's going to be a really great event. We'll kind of shift over for at least for now to the film Nothing, which is screening on the 21st. And of course, you'll have the two stars of it there with you, Andrew Miller, who plays this agoraphobic travel agent who works from home, and David Hewlett, both of whom were actually working with you on Cube as well, too. He was playing a office worker who is treated with extreme contempt in this film. Looking back now, this one is about 20 years old, almost exactly, because it was released in 2003. With that one as well, what a different shift for you. But I feel like when I look at your work, particularly in those early days, I feel like in some ways you were constantly challenging yourself to like create the most intense visual experience, but in different ways. I'm sure you learned lessons from the cube, but what was it about something like Nothing that also propelled you at that time in 2003? What was inspiring you and what was helping you create something like that?
Sure. Well, you know, in some ways I'm a little bit of a minimalist. I'm like a minimalist maximalist. Like I like the challenge and the excitement of doing something that's very, very stripped down. So in the case of Cube, it was, you know, how do I make a movie on one set, albeit a set that kind of is reused as multiple sets. And in Nothing, it was, well, how do we tell a story in nothing in a world that is over the course of the story, no spoiler alert really here, but you know, is slowly being stripped away. And there's something both scary about that, and exciting about embarking on an experiment like that, because it does feel a little bit like an experiment. And especially, again, if you kind of go back in time, there weren't a lot of movies of that nature. Now you throw a rock and you'll hit a film that takes place in a single location. And it's partly to do with the economics of filmmaking are such that it's just the only thing people could afford to do, which of course was partly my motivation at the time. But it was also this, the excitement of, like, you know, creating a story around a single environment, and how do you reinvent that environment and reinvent the story, the narrative in that environment, so that it can actually become a 90-minute story as opposed to a short film. And I always thought of Cube and Nothing as kind of two parts of maybe a trilogy of minimalist movies. The third part I've yet to do. But it's kind of exciting, kind of scary. And, you know, and the, one of the great things about Nothing also was that they were not following a pattern that somebody, a template that someone's already made for us. We're kind of experimenting. And for me, as a lover of genre films, horror films, science fiction, fantasy films in particular, I appreciate them, the films in those genres most that try to mutate the genre, that don't just sort of recycle something you've seen before, but push it in a different direction. And again, I just feel so lucky that I got to make those films. I don't think that would happen now. I think we're in a different time. That time was a little more permissible to do this sort of thing on the scale that we were working at, because even though they are very minimalist, they're actually, that's why the maximalist part of the equation is there's a lot of stuff going on, and they were kind of Chinese puzzle box movies to make. Nothing has a lot of visual effects in it, and it has a lot of gags and visual trickery, and that was really at the heart of it. And first of all, I have to congratulate you on the fact that you've seen Nothing, because not many people did, certainly not when it came out.
And it's not easy to find right now either. That was another thing where I was like, I think I want to revisit this again. And I was like, oh man, this is the tougher one of the two to find out of those two. So that's why I think it's really valuable to do screenings like this as well too, right?
Yeah, it's so wonderful. Exactly. And I have great affection for both films, obviously. In a way, particularly Nothing, because it's sort of the Cube's poor cousin. But I like to think that it's special in its own way. And I do think, I don't know if I'm supposed to say anything yet, but I think there will be a release of Nothing before too long.
Oh, excellent.
Like a 4K restoration. Oh. But you'd be hard-pressed to see a print of it anywhere. I haven't seen it on film. I haven't seen it, period, in a long time. But I certainly haven't seen it on film in a long time.
Oh, I love that this is going to be an experience for you where you're like, honestly, I'm going to stick around. Because most of the time you go to the festivals and the director's like, yeah, I lived with this for a long time. I'm going to come back after it's done. And it's really cool too, Vincenzo, that you said that in some ways, Nothing was like a spiritual sequel to Cube. And the reason why I kind of started following your work is because I felt like Cube was such an incredible visceral experience that I was like, this is somebody to be watching. And it was at a time I felt like there was a lot of really incredible Canadian directors emerging at the time. At that time, were you trying to push yourself visually to be like, I need to keep moving the bar higher? But I just thought it was a genius idea to be like, instead of locking myself in a room, I'm going to lock myself in a room of nothing. That's why I was so glad that you said it is some sort of sequel, because I felt like I was like this guy has to be thinking like, oh no, I don't want to be confined anymore. I want to be have a limit, no limits, but there's nothing.
But yeah, it's kind of, that's right. It's a prison without walls.
Yeah,
that was part of the fun. And of course, it's a comedy, so Cube is maybe has some humor in it, but it's definitely not a comedy. And Nothing is a comedy. I was very much wanted to do something. I think like one of my touchstones was The Yellow Submarine. Something I'll never forget this if you've ever seen the movie, but you know, there's the Sea of Holes. And it's this sort of surrealistic comedy, slightly cartoonish. I come from an animation background. I did storyboards at an animation studio for years. So I really wanted to do something completely different. You know, even if it's related to Cube, I also wanted to do something that was entirely different, like on the other end of the spectrum, which is also fun and scary too, because I actually find comedy much more challenging than horror So yeah, it's kind of, it's related, but it's its own creature.
We're speaking on Moving Radio today with Vincenzo Natali. I'm sure that you know his work. And if you don't, this is a perfect opportunity to check out some of his early influences with two films that he did about 20 plus years ago. Cube, which is going to screen Saturday, April 20th at 4:45 p.m., as well as Nothing on Sunday, April 22nd at 1 p.m. Both are featured as part of the Calgary Underground Film Festival. And Vincenzo will be at both screenings for a Q&A after. It's interesting you just mentioned that your history kind of in filmmaking started with your work at Nelvana with doing storyboards, but also too, you know, you've had experience with, you talk about the CFC and how influential they were and how helpful they were in creating a film like Cube, but also, you know, when you went to Ryerson to learn how to be a filmmaker at that point. When you look back at kind of those formative years, those early years of storyboarding, your time at Ryerson and just getting involved with the CFC for a first film like that with Cube, did you feel like you would ever be able to truly articulate all the incredible ideas? Because it feels like Cube was such a massive swing, you know, and it was so high concept that I can only imagine that part of you was like, if I'm going to get one shot to do this, I'm all in, right? Like, did you feel like all that storyboarding, the time at Ryerson and CFC helped prepare you for that?
Exactly. No, I think, and you know, try not to be overly analytical or strategic about these kinds of things, but when you're making your first film, you should make something that stands out, something that speaks to who you are and with your voice and have it ring loud and clear. When I wrote Cube, and I wrote it with my dear friend Andre Bajelic, who's a roommate at the time, we actually had another script that we'd started with as a possible first feature, but it wasn't nearly as interesting. And when the idea for Cube hit me, I was like, oh, this is, I felt like I had stumbled on something. Like with Cube, I didn't feel like I invented that. It was like archaeology writing it. Like I kind of stumbled on something buried in the sand. And as we excavated it, I realized, started to understand how special it was. And I realized this is, being someone who knows genre and science fiction, I was like, I don't think I've seen this before. This feels very fresh. So I was driven to make that movie for those reasons. And I have to say, I feel, and I've had this, you know, experience with one or two other things I've done, I feel that that has borne out over time, that if you're really passionate about something, if you believe in something, it will manifest itself in some form in the real world, if you're committed enough and you believe it enough, and very often it will last. Cube, you know, wasn't like, it was this little indie movie and it had a modest release, but people still talk about it. You know, and another film I did called Splice was one that I spent a long time, it was a very difficult, challenging movie to make, it kind of, you know, a bit dangerous in its own way. And people still talk about it, even though it wasn't terribly successful in its theatrical run. It seems to have lived a long life. And I really believe that's because I felt passionate about those films. You know, I believed in them. And that's partly what conjured them into the world, into the material world. And that's, I think, partly what people on some level respond to when they see them. They feel like there's a personal voice at work. It's, you know, sometimes with movies these days, I suspect because of the way they're made, they're so expensive. I'm talking about mainstream films. They are made by committee, and it's, you don't really feel, you're not left with a lot afterwards. You know, they're slick, like there's a lot to recommend about them, but you don't feel the voice of a single author. You don't feel the specialness. And I think that limits their shelf life. You know, they're amusing for a while, but they don't really resonate. And for all their flaws, I feel like that, you know, those movies do resonate. And that's why, you know, we're talking right now.
It's not just going to be you necessarily alone at these two screenings. You're actually going to have David Hewlett and Andrew Miller, who you worked with on both these projects and other stuff beyond that as well. Talk to us a little bit about where maybe that comfort is in that kind of working relationship, particularly early in your career with some people that you feel are either like-minded or that you feel close to, and there's a certain level of comfort in that. What's important about a relationship like that, and you've probably had several, but especially early in your career with working with two other people and other people that you feel like understand where you're going with your work at that point in time? And what do you love about two decades plus later coming back to revisit something like that in a weekend like that at Cuff?
I started making films when I was a kid on Super 8 film. So that's how old I am. There wasn't even video. There was no home video. It was like literally Super 8 movies. I will say at first it was, you know, we did it in a kind of casual sort of way, messing around. But at some point it became quite serious. And that's how we would spend our summers. I had me, myself and a bunch of my friends, we would make a movie every summer. And I'll tell you, things haven't changed all that much. Like partly because the principles of making a film remain the same, whether you're kids with a Super 8 camera or your iPhone, or whether you're on a set with like a, you know, 70 crew, it's still kind of the same thing. A lot of the challenges that you have are familiar to both of those paradigms. And I will also say that what gets you through it every time are relationships, our friends. Like if you work with good people, you're going to get to the end. Somehow it'll work out and it'll be good. And the reverse is true. So I think early on, like say you went to film school, the students that you meet, the people that you meet in those relationships that you begin there are probably as valuable as the educational part of that program. Connecting with those people on so many levels is going to be vital to your experience as a filmmaker. One, in terms of just actually getting the movies made, you know, and having that kind of group that where everyone is pulling together to do something and helping each other. And then there's just the personal side of it, which is it's more fun. And when you finish something, you know, you enjoy the success of completing it because you're sharing in it. And I can say now, you know, at the age of 55, I'm very excited to come to Calgary for the festival, because not just because the movies are being shown, but because I'm getting to hang out with David and Andrew and present them together as a group, because it's really something they collaborated on. So I almost think that's the most important ingredient in making a movie. It's the people. It really, I was probably, you could apply that to anything, right? But especially film, because it's collaborative. You know, if you're a painter or a writer, you are effectively working alone. You might have a group that you associate with, but you're working alone in your studio or your office or wherever, or your bedroom. But making a movie, you can't really do that alone. It's about working with other people. So Thinking About Nothing and Cube, they are kind of about that too. Like there's a little meta thing going on, self-reflective thing, because those movies are about relationships and surviving, our ability to survive being dependent on the relationships that we have. And Nothing is really a movie about friendship. Yeah, I really think that's a big part of it. One other piece of, as an old man, a piece of advice I'll give to younger filmmakers is, that I rarely hear anyone say this, but I think it's really important. Find a good producer. And by the way, the producer doesn't have to be a famous, powerful producer. It could just be a friend. I think that's really important. If you can connect with someone who wants to be a producer, of course, and who believes in you, nothing you could ever obtain, not an agent, not a manager, nothing is going to be as helpful to you getting your vision on the screen and protecting that vision as it goes through the sometimes challenging process of getting onto the screen. So, you know, I'm lucky I have a producing partner and friend, Steve Hoban, who have done most of my movies. And, you know, part of the reason I've kept more or less Final Cut on every film is because of him. The movie's always been protected by him. And I have other friends who have gone through the inverse experience where they got involved with producers who they didn't really know and necessarily trust, and it went really badly. Friendship and relationships are the most critical part of making a movie.
It's interesting too, because with the work that you did in your early career kind of afforded you this opportunity now to be able to work in these huge sandboxes of a lot of the series work that you do. So whether it's Hannibal or whether it's Westworld or whether, you know, you're working with Guillermo del Toro, you know what I mean? Like it's incredible that it's opened all these doors, and it's in a wide array of work, like Luke Cage as well. Like you're kind of all over the map and in a really incredible way on a lot of different projects. Do you love being able to kind of pop into projects and kind of work on episodes and then be able to get out of that world? Or do you love maybe some of the early things that you were doing where you were so completely immersed in a project that was taking up your life for a year plus? Or are you like, there's benefits to both?
Yeah, it's both. I resisted doing TV. I did some TV early on, maybe not the best TV, you know, purely to survive. And the problem I had with it was I just didn't think I was good at it. Like I hate not doing a good job, and I really didn't feel like I excelled at it. But in those days, TV was, especially in Canada, it was a different kind of animal. Like it just, there wasn't the money there. You had to shoot so fast. You had to kind of know how to schedule. And I don't know anything about schedules. I just have my way of doing things. TV evolved, and the desire was to make TV more like movies. And the budgets were there to support that. And in fact, when I began doing TV again, maybe, I don't know when that was, like 7 or 10 years ago, the budgets were comparable and the schedules are comparable. It became a different sort of animal. And then I didn't expect this, but I really started to enjoy working on other people's projects. Like I actually found it creatively invigorating after spending years and years toiling on my own things in my own head, to just sort of walk into someone else's world was rather exciting. And I never, and freeing in a way, because at the end of the day, I never took ownership for it. Like I understood that this belongs to someone else, but that sort of opened me up. It kind of opened the boundaries, expanded the boundaries of what I would normally do. And at the same time, when I made these things, I always made them like they're my own movies. Like I try to work as hard on them and put as much of myself into them as I would my own films. It's been really, really great. The reality is making films very difficult to survive. And TV is quite lucrative. And, you know, when I'm a professional money raiser, like, and an amateur filmmaker. Like my hobby is like making movies. Most of my time is spent trying to the projects together financially so that they can actually get made. So it's a very slow, brutal process getting a movie made. It doesn't matter what level you're at, independent, studio, feature, like it's always a challenge to get anyone to invest in you and take that big risk. Whereas with TV, basically the phone rings and none of that front end time and effort. It's much more loose and easy. And that's exhilarating too, because, you know, you need to shoot stuff. Like if you're a filmmaker, if you're an athlete, you don't want to sit around. And if you're like, you know, a weightlifter, you're not going to get strong by watching other people lift weights or talking about lifting weights or talking about how great your weightlifting is going to be. You have to lift the weights. You have to get in the gym and work out. And the wonderful thing about television is that it has permitted me to do that. Like I've chalked up a lot of hours on the set shooting stuff in a lot of different scenarios. And I feel like that's made me a better filmmaker. I'm a real believer now of just making things. You know, one of the dangers of the film industry is that, as Dorothy Parker famously said, Hollywood kills you with encouragement. Like there's always a carrot that is dangled that you chase, and years can go by chasing that carrot with nothing happening. And aside from that just being annoying, it's also like, I think it's spiritually deflating to be like somebody who wants to make stuff never actually getting to make anything. So to some degree, I really advocate for myself and to other people in my position to like just make something. And it almost doesn't matter what it is, but something that you can share. Like writing a script doesn't count because no one reads the script except, you know, yourself, your partner, and, you know, a couple development people. Like the script is never a finished thing. So it's good to do other things. Like I did a comic book recently. I just decided I'd always dreamed of doing a comic book, and I went, you know, I'm going to sit down and write a graphic and draw a graphic novel. And it was intensely invigorating. Like it just made me feel great to actually make something and go, you know what? At the end of the day, I finished a page and now it's done. Like, that's it. I didn't have to pitch anybody. I didn't have to try to get money for it. I just did it. And I made no money off of it, but that doesn't matter. You know, like, I think it was so good for just my mental and spiritual well-being. So I think that's when we're in this movie space, it's important to diversify ourselves creatively so that we don't get stuck, you know, become stagnant. And again, that's probably true of anything.
Well, our guest today is Vincenzo Natali. You should go check out both of his films, Cube and Nothing, as part of the Calgary Underground Film Festival. You can see Cube Saturday, April 20th at 4:45 p.m. and Nothing, Sunday, April 22nd at 1 p.m. Vincenzo's going to be in attendance for both screenings. It's going to be an incredible, incredible experience. So I highly suggest you go check out both films, whether you've seen them like myself, or maybe you're in a situation like Vincenzo, and it's been decades since you've seen Nothing, or maybe Cube. I think it's going to be incredible. Vincenzo, I really appreciate the time that you've given to me today and to the audience to be able to listen to this. You've given us so much to think about, and it's been incredible being able to reflect on these films. Had I told myself in 1997, I'm like, don't worry, one day you will be able to speak to the man. I would have said, you're a liar. So I appreciate you giving me this opportunity to be able to talk to you about a lot of your work, which is has an incredible influence on me. And I've just enjoyed so much. So I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you, Christian. Well, the younger version of me would have said the same thing. Never in a million years would I think I'd be talking about you in the year 2024.
And the fact that it's probably going to have a life beyond this again at some point. I'm sure you have many conversations with different people about that, I'm sure. All right. Well, Vincenzo, thank you so much. Enjoy Calgary and the weekend it has to offer to you. And I think you're going to have a lot of fun there.
Thank you, Christian. It's been a real delight.